Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Apple bias. Today is Sunday, April 8th, 2018, and this is show number 674. Well, I have some sad news to share, and I've been really fretting about how to tell this story, but here goes. George from Oklahoma City, not to be confused with George from Tulsa, wrote me a note last week asking if I'd heard from Reggie Ashworth recently. Reggie is the developer for two apps I really like and have recommended for years to you, App Delete and VidConvert. George was concerned because while both apps are frequently updated, he hadn't seen an update in a really long time. I suggested George write to Reggie and I gave him Reggie's address. George did so and got the worst possible answer. Reggie was killed in a car accident last year. I never met Reggie, but I somehow felt close to him. He didn't answer support emails with a curt response, but rather was, you know, friendly and fun in our conversations over the years. We always said we'd get together in person because we only lived like a half hour, 45 minutes apart, but we never made the time. I have to say, I really feel like we lost a jewel in the Mac development community when we lost Reggie. Reggie's family is trying to figure out how to sell the business, but they're not developers and haven't figured out how to even get the source code yet. So I don't have super high hopes that we'll see development for App Delete or VidConvert. There are some good alternatives to App Delete. I've heard both AppZapper from AppZapper.com and AppCleaner from FreeMacSoft.net are good alternatives. I haven't tried either one, but I guess I'll have to go give them a try. Anyway, it feels weird to share that with you, but you've heard me talk about Reggie Ashworth for years, and so just thought I should tell you about that. Well, many of you are big fans of the app Clarify from BlueMangoLearning.com. I advertised for them for years because of how often I use this software to create tutorials for the podcast and help me remember how to do things that I've been doing myself. I announced a while ago that BlueMango Learning was stopping active development of Clarify to focus on their business software, ScreenSteps. The product Clarify is already awesome, so that didn't seem like a devastating blow to me that it wasn't going to be changing. But then we found out that Clarify is 32-bit software. And in the operating system that will come out after High Sierra, presumably this fall, Apple will not be supporting 32-bit apps. At the time they made this announcement, BlueMango wouldn't commit either way to whether they were going to update it to 64-bit, leaving many of us nervous. Well, I wrote to BlueMango this week with an email telling them that I was literally losing sleep over this. I was lying awake at night the other night thinking about it. I know, it sounds like I live a charmed life if this is the things that keep me up at night, right? Well, I'm not one to wallow in lost apps because there's usually a reasonable alternative. I didn't even bellyache much when Aperture was abandoned by Apple and I moved on to Photos. But there is nothing even close to Clarify out in the market. I tried out StepShot from StepShot.net, which is similar, but in my opinion, it's a very poor substitute. It's also $12 a month or $119 a year. Even for as many tutorials as I do, that's kind of a steep price. Well, I did a search for screen snapshot documentation tool step-by-step, put all those words into a search, and I found StepShot, and every single other hit on Google was either for Clarify or for ScreenSteps. Now, you might think ScreenSteps itself is the answer, but they discontinued selling their desktop app and only have a cloud service, and it's $99 a month for 5 user accounts. So it's not exactly quite priced for the home user. Well, anyway, I told you I emailed over to BlueMango Learning and told him I was losing sleep, and Trevor thought that was kind of funny. But anyway, his answer wasn't definitive by any means, but I got a slight glimmer of hope. He told me that ScreenSteps, their main source of income, shares the same code base, and it's also 32-bit. So after they go through the process of upgrading ScreenSteps to 64-bit, they'll have a better idea of how hard it will be to upgrade to Clarify to 64-bit. So he didn't make any promises that they were going to do it, but if he goes through it and he figures out how to do it on the stuff that makes him money, maybe he'll upgrade Clarify. That said, as I was poking around reading some things, I discovered that they did discontinue selling new licenses in January because it depended on a licensed software engine. So while there is a glimmer of hope that they'll upgrade Clarify to 64-bit and it will keep working for those of us who already own licenses, this is not an ideal situation. If anyone does find an alternative to Clarify, I am all ears. I will go all in, learn about it, figure out how to use it. Or if you're a developer, you know what? Go write one for me. I would really, really like that. In Chit Chat Across the Pond this week, Joe Duganzik from Smarter Home Life is back with a crossover episode between his show and Chit Chat. The first half of the show is him interviewing me about the genesis of my home automation efforts, all the way through current day, what I've been doing lately, and my future plans to make my home smarter. Then we flip the tables and I play Stump the Home Automation Guy with questions from the Nocilla Castaways. I'm really glad you guys sent in so many great questions, and I'm so glad we did that Q&A part because I learned a lot of stuff I didn't know. Things I thought I understood, I totally didn't understand. So it was really, really interesting. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. Go check it out at the link in the show notes or click on either the Chit Chat logo at podfeet.com, light or regular, depending if you're on a diet. And if you go to the website, I've embedded Joe's YouTube video for the show notes, which is a fun way to see it rather than just listen. And of course, you can always look for Chit Chat Across the Pond or Chit Chat Across the Pond Lite in your podcatcher of choice. Steve and I are freshly back from CSUN's Assistive Tech Conference. It's a playground for accessible technology. We didn't get a lot of interviews done this time, I think because we were pretty exhausted just having come back from Paris. We, you know, did laundry and turned around, ran back out and went to a conference. So even though we were exhausted, we still got a couple of great ones. And let's get started with one of my favorite interviews. Well, last year we came to the Second Sight booth and talked to Dwayne Tsutsui, and he's back here with a little more information, some updates on some of the devices that they're working on that are very exciting for low vision. Let's. Why don't you start us off with what's come along since we last talked to you?
Okay, well, since last year we've made some very nice strides in our product development efforts in creating new technology, new algorithms to improve the imaging that the patient gets with the Argus 2.
And the Argus 2 was specifically for, is it retinal pigmentosa?
Yeah, it's for patients that have gone completely blind due to retinitis pigmentosa, yes.
Retinitis, I'll get it yet. Okay, so in this is audio and video, but in his hands he's got a little model of a head with some eyeballs, and he's going to pull an eyeball out. Don't get scared. It's a fake one.
Yeah, so this is the Argus 2 device, and it consists of an electronics package that is implanted in and around the eye. The package is placed underneath the major muscles of the eye, and then a small incision is made in the sclera right here. And then if you look inside, you can see the array that's tacked onto the back of the eye on the surface of the retina.
And then on the side, you've got a coil here. I assume that's an antenna to talk to to the device that the person wears on their head?
That's correct. It's an antenna and an induction coil. That's how the device is powered.
Okay, so there's no battery in your eyeball that you got to get replaced?
No, the battery is on the external computer that the patient wears.
Okay, and that external computer is a pair of glasses. Let me just grab that here for a sec.
Yes.
And then pull it off the table. So it's a pair of glasses. That's got to be the induction coil there on the side?
This is the transmitter and induction coil, but the computer is this video processing unit, and you can see the battery here, and this is what is the brains of the whole operation. This is where all the algorithms and signal processing software is located.
So this is pretty cool. I mean, it's not that much bigger than something you'd wear to talk at a conference, the battery pack thing hooked to your eye, to your glasses there.
Yes.
Okay, let me set that back down there for you. All right, so you also mentioned that you've gotten more Medicare approval from some states.
Yes, we continue to expand our coverage, or we get positive coverage in states.
So that's how it gets paid for people,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah, that, and kind of important, but yeah, that's how we can obtain payment for the system and the surgery.
Okay, so this surgery is going on in real humans right now?
Yes, that is correct. We're close to 300 patients now.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're expanding. It's
That's really exciting. That's a real deal. That's no CES someday thing. So you idly mentioned that you have another product for people with other kinds of blindness.
Yes, that is called the Orion cortical prosthesis. And as you had mentioned earlier, the Argus is for people who have lost their vision due to retinitis pigmentosa only. There are a greater number of people who have gone blind for other reasons, and that's why we developed the Orion device. The exciting thing about the Orion is that we have, in fact, since we last talked, we have started the clinical trial. It's at two centers, UCLA in Los Angeles, as well as Baylor University in Houston. We did our first implant in January, and we have another one scheduled for next week. And this involves an array that we bypass the eye and the optic nerve altogether and place an array onto the surface of the visual cortex of the brain.
Oh, wow. Now, you mentioned before we were talking that this is for acquired blindness because your brain has to have figured out how to process those signals at some point in time?
Yes. You had to have some functional vision at some point or another. So if you've had functional vision at some time and then lost your vision, that's what I refer to as acquired blindness. Then you would qualify for the device.
Okay, so the Orion, is it the same sort? It's not the same sort of device. It's actually an array. It's a detector detecting light and changing the signals into something.
No, it works a lot in the same way that the Argus does. It's an array of electrodes that works together with a camera that's mounted onto a pair of glasses, and anything that the camera captures, it gets lit up. That shape gets lit up onto the array. And rather than having it projected onto your retina like the Argus 2, it's projected directly onto the visual cortex of your brain. So you don't even need eyes nor an optic nerve to see the flashes.
That is crazy. So what kind of resolution are we talking about today?
Well, it's still a 60 electrode array. So, that's kind of hard to say exactly the resolution.
Is that like 60 by 60 pixels?
Or? No, it's actually 6 by 10 electrodes. But it's kind of hard to really gauge resolution because of the way that an individual electrode, when it activates cells, it doesn't necessarily activate. It's not one.
In a nice rectangular array for us.
It's not one particular pixel that they see. Sometimes a single electrode could actually elicit multiple flashes.
So, can you give any vague idea? I mean, is it like you could see a doorway, but you couldn't recognize a person, or could you read? What level is every time?
Right. You would not be able to recognize facial features or read, but you could see doorways, windows. You could see lines in the crosswalk. Any kind of situation where there's a lot of contrast. If you're walking along a pathway in a park and there's grass along the side, you would clearly see the difference between the pathway and grass.
Oh, wow. So for mobility, it would be outstanding, right?
Yes, it would be very... our patients,
independence.
Yeah, our patients have reported that it has helped their mobility and their independence greatly.
Yeah, and that's a huge quality of life issue right there. I mean, I'm sure you guys will keep improving this, but for now, that's a huge leap forward. Well, I certainly hope you a lot of success with this. Again, the company is Second Sight. If people want to look into it, where would they go?
Well, you can go to our website at www.secondsight.com, or you can call our toll-free number at 877-756-3703.
Great. Thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you again next year with maybe you'll have even more advances for us, Duane.
I hope to be able to report new advances, yes.
Well, I got to say, you see why I say that was my favorite interview? That thing, that is so cool. I love what Second Sight is doing. And like I said in the interview, I can't wait to go back and learn more.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions. Dumb questions.
How do I? What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
I think one of the main reasons I love Dumb Questions is because I love that jingle from Victor Cayao. It makes me laugh every single time. Well, Harold sent in a lovely note and included a dumb question for the show. Here's his note. Dear Allison, several months ago, I started listening to the NoCillaCast after discovering and listening to all episodes of Taming the Terminal. I haven't skipped a single week ever since. Many thanks for putting a big smile on my face every week when I listen to your podcast. It is such a pleasure to listen to you and Bart. My wife also started listening. She is a happy Mac user while I am enjoying Windows. We both love using our iPhone. My dumb question is, why are you so interested in accessibility? In case you're wondering, I am visually impaired myself and hence appreciate your focus on accessibility. By the way, I'm catching up with Programming by Stealth. It'll take some time, though. I'll stay subscribed as long as you keep podcasting. Harold from the Netherlands. Well, I do have to say that I want to make sure I give a big shout out to Harold and his wife, Hester, because they sound like true Nocilla castaways. I am confused. For some reason recently, I've been hearing from a lot of Netherlands listeners. And I mean, that's awesome, but it's really interesting when I see like a whole country just start to show up a lot. Now, my focus is mostly on blind accessibility because those are the people who talk to me the most, to be honest. Well, the story starts quite a long time ago. When I was around 11 or 12 years old, I read a book called Follow My Leader by James Garfield. This is a book about a little boy who's playing with firecrackers and becomes blinded when one goes off unexpectedly. The book takes you through his journey of anger and denial and his desire that all corners of things should be padded just for him. He eventually gets a seeing eye dog, which he names Sirius after the dog star. He learns Braille in a special school. The author included a book in the book a picture of what the dots look like on Braille for each letter of the alphabet. Well, I was so intrigued by this that I took a piece of cardboard and I used a punch to make myself a Braille alphabet so I could teach myself Braille by feel. That was my first foray I had into accessibility and accessible tech, if you will, and I remember thinking it was really neat that there was this secret code for blind people. Later in life, my mother got macular degeneration and was legally blind for the last 30 or so years of her life. She was a real trooper and got all kinds of cool accessibility gadgets and let me play with them. Then when I got into podcasting, several blind people started writing to me and I realized audio podcasts are pretty much the most awesome thing ever for the blind. At the first podcast expo I attended, I met a gentleman named Daryl Shandro of the Blind Access Journal, and he worked on my education in the field even more. The next year at the Podcast Expo, I met blind musician, recording studio owning podcaster Slough, who took me even further. Eventually at Macworld one year, I did a tech talk called Blindfolded, where I did my entire presentation on iPhone and Mac while blindfolded. I couldn't have done this without a vast staff of encouraging blind people who gave me tips and tricks along the way and encouraged me to keep at it. Those people included Daryl and Slough, also Buddy Brannon, Dan Eckmeyer, Shane Jackson, Donald Bretta, Keith Watson, Joshua Loya, Kevin Chow, Scott Howell, James Austin, Bill Holton, Dennis Bartlett, and Laura Schindler, who isn't blind but teaches the blind in Los Angeles. So you can see how much fun this is with this much encouragement and help. Over the years, blind accessibility has just become part of the fabric of the show, and I'm so pleased to be able to see now accessibility as part of the mainstream conversation, not as something you add later. That's been a huge shift over the years. So thanks for asking the question, Harold. I thought I'd answered this before, but I looked and I don't believe I ever officially answered it in full on the podcast. You've probably noticed by now that this show is not ad-supported, but it does cost money to produce the shows for you, and that's why we have two business models to help pay for hosting and gear. This week, I'd like to thank James Tisdale for deciding to become a patron of the Podfeet podcast. I mean, that's just fun to say, right? Anyway, through Patreon, James was able to choose an amount per show that was right for him and his family. The other way the show is supported is by people using the Amazon affiliate links when they buy things I talk about on Amazon. Now, here's a little tip you may not know. Even if you're not in the United States, if you're in England, Canada, or Germany, maybe I need to add the Netherlands, you can still use Amazon affiliate links to help the show. All you have to do is go to podfeet.com/Amazon, and on that page, you're going to see the flag for your country. Actually, you can go to podfeet.com/funwithflags if you get that joke. That also takes you to the Amazon flags by country. Click there on your flag, and anything you buy may send a small percentage to help support the podcast. Now, I would like to remind our UK and Canadian listeners to really try to remember to use those Amazon affiliate links for your country, because our German listeners are really good about using theirs. But I got to say, the UK and Canada are falling way behind Germany in remembering to use their affiliate links. Now, you can't let that happen, right? We're in the Orcam booth, and I'm talking to Dr. Brian Walensky, and he's got on a pair of glasses with a very small rectangular thing magnetically attached to it, and he's going to tell us what it is.
So what Orcam is, it's an assistive device for people who are blind or visually impaired. It's comprised of a 13-megapixel camera that takes a photograph and then speaks back to the person wearing it text, facial recognition, product recognition, basically taking the image and putting it into text and describing it to the person.
Okay, so is it doing that real time, or it takes a second, I would imagine?
It takes less than a second, but it is doing it in real time. Someone basically just takes a picture of some text, and the OrCam device takes the photo, and then it automatically uploads and starts reading the text back to the person.
Okay, so I could hold a menu up in front of me, and it would start to read to me, for example?
Correct, and what's great even about it is that the OrCam 2.0 version now has two little LED lights. So if you're in a dimly lit restaurant, the camera, the light is going to automatically come on and be able to read that menu in that dark restaurant.
Yeah, I'm almost 60. I could use that every day of the week right now.
Myself included.
So you've also done some stuff with facial recognition?
Sure. So the device also does facial recognition, where we recognize unknown or known individuals that you have in the system. So if it's an unknown person, it's going to say a man or a woman is in front of you. If it is a known person that you put in the system, where it could recognize up to 100 people, it will automatically say that person's name that you have in the system.
Okay, again, something we could all use on every day of the week, right? You sure we can't just get these for ourselves now?
Sure we can. I actually use it for reading. And one thing that we are looking into is children with learning disabilities on using the device to help with reading.
Oh, that's a really, really interesting idea. So this is a product that's available today.
It's currently available. It is out of Israel, but it is in many different countries and right here in the U.S.
And how much does it cost?
It's $4,500 for the OrCam MyEye 2.0 version. And there is another version that's called OrCam MyEye, which is $3,500.
Okay, and what's the difference between the two?
The two is the difference in the design. The original version had a wire and a battery pack, and that was one of the issues. People just didn't want this heavy battery carrying around. So the new 2.0 version is wireless.
Okay, and is it is it just talking to your ear, because it's sitting? I've got it on right now. I got a pair of glasses.
Explain sort of what it looks like. So it's basically a small device that's about the size of your finger,
a stick of gum at the most.
Sure, and weighs very, very light, and it has on the back surface just two little magnets that's able to connect to your glasses.
So any glasses, and you've just got a little tiny piece that it's hooked to, right?
Correct.
You've got a little piece that goes onto your glasses.
It's a little.
It's like, really unobtrusive.
It's like a zip tie with a little magnet on it. And as long as you can get that on your side of your glasses, the device can just simply hook right onto it.
Okay, very cool. And then it looks like it's got micro USB for charging?
Correct. It's got a micro USB for charging, and it also connects up to Wi-Fi right now for updates. So updates are automatically pushed forward.
Oh, that's a great feature. Of course you need that.
Yes.
Well, this is very cool. If people want to find out more about OrCam 2.0, where would they go?
They go to OrCam.com.
All right. Thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you.
Well, after seeing the OrCam MyEye 2.0 and several other similar products at CSUN, it got me to thinking about whether these dedicated physical devices really still have a real place in accessibility going forward. I say this because there are now some apps for Android and iOS that provide a lot of the same kind of functionality without the need for a dedicated device. Let's take a look at one of those right now. Well, I'm going to talk about an accessibility app called Seeing AI, developed by Microsoft. And while you might not need this yourself, it's fascinating. It's a free tool for iOS that has huge capabilities. I'm going to walk through how I heard about it and the problem it originally solved, and then I'm going to do some crazy multimedia. I took a series of short videos using iOS's built-in recording function of each of the tools within Seeing AI. The videos are embedded over in the blog post, and you can look at those as I go along, but I'm going to play the audio from them for the podcast, setting up what's going to happen in each segment. I was alerted to Seeing AI by Kevin Jones after I did the review of the Night Eyes Taglit, the little LED lights I clamp on my shirt for walking Tesla in the evening to keep from being plowed down by an unobservant motorist. Kevin is blind and wanted to know if there was any physical indicator on the Taglit that would tell him whether the light was on, off, or blinking. Since there wasn't a physical indicator on the taglets, he asked if I'd test a free app called Seeing AI for Microsoft. This app, like I said, does a ton of cool stuff, and I'll walk you through it, but let's start with that problem from Kevin. Seeing AI is available in the App Store, of course, and there's a link in the show notes to it. When you launch Seeing AI, there will be a series of buttons across the bottom, the last of which says Light. After tapping on Light, I held the taglet under the camera on my iPhone, and I heard a solid, low tone. Then I clicked on the taglet, and as the light turned on, the phone started playing a higher pitched tone. I clicked on the tag lid again, which makes the light blink, and then I could hear an alternating high-low tone from Seeing AI. One more click, and the light went off, and the Seeing AI gave me the solid low tone again. All right, let's listen to the recording of Seeing AI playing the sound. So if you listen carefully, you'll actually hear the slight click when I'm actually clicking the taglet, followed by the tones indicating what the light is doing. Well, I think we can categorically say that Seeing AI easily will tell Kevin whether his taglet is turned on, off, or blinking. But you know, I couldn't stop there. I had to see what else Seeing AI could do. In the next set of tools, you'll hear Seeing AI read things out to us. If you're blind and have VoiceOver enabled, Seeing AI will do the reading and it won't speak out loud. I think it's pretty cool that Seeing AI will read out loud for those with low vision, and it's also useful for those with sight who want to test out its features and learn more about the power of the tools. But for the people using VoiceOver, VoiceOver will have all of the sounds coming out of the VoiceOver voice. So Seeing AI's first button is entitled Short Text. They don't define short text, but I interpret it as anything that's not a full document. With short text, Seeing AI will read you real time while doing optical character recognition on the fly. In testing Seeing AI, it's really tempting for me to hold things up perfectly aligned and in view of the camera since I have the gift of sight. To stop my natural tendencies, I put on the blindfold I used for my tech talk at Macworld back in 2012, the one I just finished telling you about, where I demonstrated VoiceOver on iOS and the Mac completely blindfolded. Of course, I still had my blindfold. I mean, duh. Well, I tested it on a tube of sunscreen for which I could not read the ingredients at all, even with my reading glasses. And while not perfect, it was a lot better than reading without them. In the video you're about to hear, I'm holding up to the camera the box for my Ring chime. I start by holding it perfectly in view, and then I start making it a little more challenging for the app, holding it crazy angles. You will hear it refer to IT as though it's an acronym, but the word should be IT. In the third set of things it read, the box is at a 45-degree angle with the text nearly upside down. I thought this was really impressive.
Short text. In the box, Ring chime x 1.88 inches x 1.38 inches, wall plug adapters. Domestic, plug IT in, set IT up, link your Ring doorbell. Tones, multiple tones, do not disturb, volume control.
Okay, like I said, pretty good. Now let's say you've got a full page you need to read. This is where the document tool comes into play. Again, testing with my blindfold, I put a white piece of paper with printed text on it down on my brown faux wood desk. I heard Seeing AI tell me that it couldn't see the upper left corner. So I moved in that direction. And it said the bottom right was missing. Duh, that must mean I'm too close. It gives you these verbal instructions to not only tell you how to align the document, but also to make sure you're far enough away that it can see the whole thing. Once I was far enough away, it told me to hold steady, and then I heard the camera shutter. After that, it played a little tune for maybe 2 to 3 seconds and said, processing. At that point, nothing else happened, so I had to peek out from under my blindfold. Seeing AI was now displaying the entire document completely OCR'd already for me. On the bottom left was a play and stop button, which when pressed would read out the text. If you have VoiceOver turned on, you can just drag your finger over the text and it would already read it out loud, or you can hit the play stop button. But if you're low vision, there's also an A plus and an A minus symbol that when tapped increases and decreases it for easier reading. I like that the document setting is useful for the blind and visually impaired. That's really cool to see the dual use. Now, one warning, the OCR is highly dependent on how much light you have on your document. I got some poor results, so I moved a bright light over the document and it did much better at recognizing the characters. Now, the good news is, if you're blind, you can use the light function in Seeing AI to find out if you have adequate lighting. All right, let's listen to the document tool in action. Unfortunately, there is a conflict between Seeing AI reading out loud and the screen recorder functionality in iOS, so I wasn't able to capture the reading part itself. I can tell you, though, that it was well over 90% accurate in OCR accuracy, though.
Document. Left edge not visible. Top and right edges not visible. Top left corner not visible. Hold steady. Processing.
Okay, a little anticlimactic that you didn't get to read it, but hear it read. But trust me, it was really, really good. Well, the next one isn't nearly as big of a challenge. It's called product, and the problem it solves is identifying a product by its barcode. If you're a sightling, it's pretty easy to line up the barcode under the camera, but how the heck do you do that if you can't see? Seeing AI solves this in an interesting audible way. It gives you a fast beeping sound if it sees a barcode, and then makes a tone when it thinks it has captured the code. In the recording you're going to hear, you'll hear it try and fail to find the barcode, and then the second time succeed. I did it on three different packages, and even though I'm not holding the boxes aligned properly at all, it identifies all three products successfully using their barcodes.
Processing. Not recognized. Processing. Smart home camera Wizikam 1080p HD wireless night vision two-way audio white Wizik. Process Belkin 6700 mAh valet charger power pack for Apple Watch and iPhone. Process Ring Chime white doorbell extender.
Well, it didn't necessarily pronounce everything correctly. That was the Wizikam in the second one, but it definitely identified all three of those products. Now, I'm not sure the next feature would be super useful or rudely intrusive in real life, but it's called Person. And the object is it's to help you identify people. The idea is that you can take three photos of someone with Seeing AI, and then you give the person a name. The camera gives feedback on whether you've gotten them in the frame, but they suggest you have the person take their own picture for you. I think letting the person take the photos make it a little bit less weird when you use it. Anyway, after you've stored the person in your Seeing AI app, you can simply point your phone at them and it will tell you who they are and tell you how far away they are. I used Seeing AI to take pictures of Steve and me, and it was flawless at telling us apart. I know, we're really similar, being born on the same day only 4 hours apart, so that's pretty amazing. Anyway, here's what it sounds like as I hold the phone facing first Steve and then flip the camera around towards me and then back.
Person, Steve near top edge, Steve near center 2 feet away. Allison near center 2 feet away. Steve near center 3 feet away. Steve near top edge 4 feet away. Steve near center 8 feet away. One face near right edge 3 feet away. Allison near right edge 3 feet away.
I guess I should have mentioned that while Steve and I were doing this recording, we were moving back and forward, moving away, and that's why you're hearing the distances change as well. I didn't do a video on this, but when I was with Dorothy today, I took pictures of her, and it could identify her and me separate as well. So not just a man with a beard versus me, so that's a little more impressive. The famous blind jazz musician Ray Charles is reported to have insisted on always being paid in single dollar bills so he could be certain he wasn't being cheated. With Seeing AI's currency reader, he wouldn't have needed to do that. Seeing AI is not the first iOS app to solve this. I told you about LookTel's money reader app way back in 2011, but it's cool that this feature is being folded into Seeing AI. The tool is called Currency, but it's labeled Currency Preview to designate it as an experimental tool. Not sure at first why that was, because it's not that hard to identify money versus a person, right? Well, here's a quick demo where I hold a $1 and a $20 bill at all kinds of crazy angles, showing only part of the bill to the camera, and it does correctly identify them.
Currency Preview. $1. $1. $20. $1. $20.
Well, it obviously was pretty good at that. Currency Preview also has options to identify British pounds, Canadian dollars, and euros. We had some British and European currency, but oddly, Currency Preview stayed completely silent when those options were set. I guess that's the experimental part they were talking about. They haven't finished that part just yet. The next experimental tool is supposedly to identify scenes. To use Scene, you point at the area you want to identify and then tap on the screen for it to take a picture. You hear the happy thinking sounds and the word processing, and then it comes back with text that it reads out loud telling you what it found. From there, you can save the photo it took, share the image, or close the image. In this demo, I pointed it first at my bathroom from an angle where you can only see the sinks, cabinet, and mirror. Next, I pointed at Tesla asleep on her dog bed, and finally, I pointed at my bed and dresser with a window behind it. Let's hear what it says.
Scene preview. Processing. A room filled with furniture and a large mirror. Processing. A large brown dog lying on a rug. Processing. A bedroom with a large bed in a hotel room.
Well, I don't know if that means that our bedroom looks like a Motel 6 or maybe the Four Seasons. It's hard to tell. Anyway, it was a little bit comical what it came up with. After this demo, I was playing with it and I took a picture of just part of my computer screen with not much showing on screen. It came back with probably a screenshot of an open laptop computer sitting on a desk. I gotta tell you, for what it saw, that was a really good description. Well, another experimental feature is called color preview. I'm not going to play a recording of this because it's kind of boring. You're just going to hear color names. It does say the colors, but I got to tell you, it's highly dependent on lighting for accuracy. I'm not really sure it'd be of that much use, but maybe I didn't understand the use case. I did play around this at Dorothy's house, and the lighting was really good, and it basically says everything is gray, black, or brown. Maybe a little bit of white once in a while, but it definitely doesn't have any kind of subtle things. You know, you're not going to hear it say aubergine. Well, probably the tool that surprised me the most is called handwriting preview. My handwriting isn't illegible, but it's also kind of weird. I simply can't seem to decide whether I should be printing or using cursive, so my text is kind of random. Within a single word, it'll switch. I read once that someone whose writing changes mid-word from printed to script and back has some sort of psychopathy. Either way, I figured my random handwriting would give Seeing AI a run for its money. I wrote on a pad of paper the words, "Hi, this is Allison Sheridan. I'm a podcaster with an ever so slight Apple bias." In the demo you'll hear, I first bring the camera over the pad with it right side up and centered. Now, with no indicators to tell me whether it can see the page or the text, it suddenly says processing and then speaks the exact words I wrote. I did notice that it said command at the beginning, but after watching it a couple of times, I finally figured out why. My keyboard was slightly viewable in the upper left and the command key was showing, which is pretty funny. But next in the audio, you'll hear I turned the paper so it was at a diagonal. You will hear pretty much complete gibberish coming out of Seeing AI with that angle, but a few of the correct words are still in there. Then I turn the page upside down and you'll hear only gibberish. Finally, I put it back upright and you hear the text clearly read at that point.
Handwriting preview. Processing. Command. Hi, this is Allison Sheridan. I am a podcaster with an ever so slight Apple bias. Processing. Elizo at M. Potter Soling. Hi, the ever biased J.I.N. app. Processing. Hit comment. Command. Song. Naughty trying as gave no yeem. Stop. Melina plays Lawson S. Smith. Processing. Command. Common. Hi, this is Allison Sheridan. I am a podcaster with an ever so slight Apple bias.
Okay, every time I hear that upside down part of gibberish, it just really cracks me up. That was pretty funny. So I guess handwriting preview is only useful if you hear the gibberish, that means you're holding it wrong. So it's impressive, but a little more challenging to review. So I guess each time you hear gibberish, turn it 90 degrees until you hear something intelligible. That's all I can advise. But that is pretty impressive. You'd also have to flip back and forth between short text and handwriting to figure out what's on that paper in the first place. Because if you have it on short text and you're showing it handwriting, it won't know what to do and vice versa. And if you can't see, you can't tell whether it's short text or handwriting. Anyway, in conclusion, Seeing AI is an amazingly powerful tool set that is free from Microsoft. I really do like the new Microsoft with their increased focus on accessibility and, of course, their support for iOS. I highly encourage you to download Seeing AI and play with it for yourself. It's a lot of fun. There's an article over at iaccessibility.net by Michael Dwaz. In this article, he compares the OrCam MyEye 2.0, that's a people you heard the interview about in early in the show, and Seeing AI. And it might be interesting to read if you're interested in hearing from someone who doesn't have vision, who makes a comparison between these two tools. Well, that's going to wind us up for this week. Do not forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. Remember, if you email me a dumb question, I get to play the dumb question corner music from Victor Cajal, and we all love that. So send me some dumb questions. You can also follow me on Twitter at Podfeet. And we already talked about this, but everything good starts with podfeet.com. You want the Patreon link? Podfeet.com/Patreon. you want to join the Facebook community, which is a lot of fun. That's at podfeet.com/Facebook. You hate Facebook? That's okay. We got a Google Plus community. A lot of fun people over there too. Podfeet.com/Google Plus. If you want to join in the Discord chat, go over to podfeet.com/chat. If you want to click those Amazon affiliate links, want to find your flag, podfeet.com/Amazon. And if you want to join in the fun of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic Nocilla Castaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.